So we are in a special time as we are in the throes of the income tax season, trying to maximize opportunities for income tax savings. It has become more and more a relevant part of each individual who is focusing on the preservation and the compounding of their estate to address their income tax issues. We, as you know, have built an income tax practice here, first doing representing each of you in your charitable work, your foundations, and the trust works that you've created, trust. And now people have asked us to help them with their corporate and their individual returns. We're honored to do that because we think that there is a tremendous tie-in with income tax and estate tax, and working those two under the same roof can provide real advantages. This is not to take away the power of premier firms who are doing great work. We are honored to continue to work with them in their income tax practice. This just provides an alternative to work things through, and it allows us to continue to get better in giving you advice and consultation. So number one, review your plan. Given the significant tax law changes on the state and federal level over the past years, it's important to review your wills and trusts to ensure that income tax is efficiently maximized. When you move assets into a trust during your lifetime, as we've often done for each of you, to minimize estate tax, getting assets off your balance sheet, allowing the growth to take place inside of a trust, for many years, and it seems like yesterday when the federal exemption was at $675,000, if you had an estate worth $1 million, you had almost a 50% estate tax on the assets from $675,000 to $1 million. So you had a $325,000 delta that needed to be addressed. Over time, the exemptions went up. But as your assets continued to grow, we were moving more and more assets into trust to avoid the tax. Now, with the exemption at over $11 million, some of you who are on this call and we're representing may have assets in their total estate that are less than $1 million. And others, when it's a husband and wife, may have assets that are less than $22 million. And so the question then begins to be asked, do we move assets, was it the proper thing to move them into trust and move them off your balance sheet? Well, certainly at the time that we did them, for sure it was. And can we be sure that the exemption will stay at $11 million? Absolutely not. In fact, it's scheduled to snap back to a little over $5 million at the end of 2025. A little over 5 years from now. So the answer here is, do we continue to focus on keeping assets off the balance sheet? And the answer is, we must address that. We must address that the exemptions constantly change. But for those of you who are significantly below the exemption of $11 million and are in a retirement mode and may say, I don't ever imagine that I'll be in below, that I won't even be above the $5 million exemption. Our job at that point is to say, well, when we move the assets over, we focused on the highest, most compelling tax priority, which was to save estate tax. Now that we know there is no real estate tax issue because tax law has evolved and you are now insulated from that, let's focus on income tax savings. When you move the assets into trust, you lost the opportunity to get what we call a step up in basis, which means when you passed away, your assets that were in your estate would get a step up, and it would allow the basis to then be reset for purposes of sale to avoid gains tax, or for purposes of resetting your depreciation schedule, which is For many of you who understand the notion of depreciating, for example, your real estate assets over a period of years is a very, very important tax benefit. And now under the Trump new tax laws, it's even more valuable. More on those thoughts as we continue this discussion. But the key aspect here is that we need to look at your trusts and determine if it is more valuable to keep your assets inside the trust, which would avoid the estate tax. But if there is no estate tax, now the question for you is whether or not we can help reset income tax basis by moving these assets back into your name. So comment number two is to address testamentary and credit shelter trusts. There are opportunities, at least in the trust that we've built for you, that allow us to modify the trust, what we call decant, or swap assets in and out of the trust, which would allow you to move low basis assets that are inside the trust back into your name and allow them to get a step up when you go to heaven, and take high basis assets that you have in your name and swap them into the trust, so that we've had the best of both worlds. We've saved on estate tax and we've gotten a step up in basis. We cannot emphasize enough from point one and point two that if you don't take the time to sit down and meet and let us look at the totality of your assets, look at where low basis and high basis is, look at what assets would be subject to estate tax or none at all, and whether or not there's a compelling need to save on income tax, there's $1 million of tax savings opportunities that we could be seizing on. We do not want to miss that. And that is on a more modest estate. On a more significant one, the income tax savings could be powers of 10 on income tax savings. Number three, pay your retirement accounts forward. So if you are the recipient of an IRA from your parents when they're coming down the line and you've inherited that, rather than receive it and then have it included in your estate, consider having that IRA go to your children. Elizabeth in our office, who runs the estate administration practice group, can go through these pieces with you at that time. But it also can be done by you communicating with us where your parents stand. And maybe your parents would skip you altogether when it comes to an IRA. An IRA's distribution schedule is based on the life expectancy of the beneficiary. So if a grandchild receives it who is 20 years old, there is a significantly longer distribution of the IRA that takes place, and the schedule could be 60 years or 65 years, and therefore less coming out each year. Why is it important that less is withdrawn from the IRA? Because the piece of the IRA that is not withdrawn continues to compound without tax. You can also assist your parents, because the way that we look at it, they're generation one, you're generation two, and your children are generation three. You could assist your parents by giving them advice on converting their IRAs to Roth IRAs, which would allow your children to inherit this asset, and there would be no tax when they're withdrawing it. So the Roth conversion, where there's no tax on the withdrawal, would benefit your children for the next 60 years after your folks pass away. Maybe even consider loaning your parents money or making a gift to them so that they could bear the tax burden to convert to a Roth IRA. We think these opportunities could provide real power in the growth of assets and the savings of tax, income tax, by converting the Roth on your parents' generation and having you decline to receive that and having it passed down to your children, generation three. Elizabeth calls that strategy a disclaimer of the IRA. Number four, use assets as leverage for gifting. So when you have the opportunity of using appreciated assets as leverage, you can provide wonderful wealth transfer opportunities to minimize the estate tax. It's common to give assets, of course, as part of a wealth transfer to minimize the tax. however, to minimize the tax. However, in doing so, the assets do not receive a step up in basis upon the donor's death. So we've discussed this before. The idea here may be to take assets and put a mortgage on them, finance them. And in that respect, so for example, if you had a $5 million piece of property, just for easy math, and you put a $4 million mortgage on that, or even a $2 million mortgage, so that you felt comfortable, you could give the $2 million of proceeds to your children, but retain the apartment or the building in your name. So when you pass away, the value of the asset is not $5 million, but it's $5 million less the $2 million mortgage. The $2 million cash proceeds you've already given to your kids, so that avoids the tax while you're alive. But the property gets a reset on its basis schedule. So the children then receive the property without any carryover of basis. They get the new step up in basis. They also, and you also saved on estate tax because you moved $2 million out of your name while you're alive. And so in many respects, all people are happy. Do your folks or you feel anxious about taking a property that has no debt and putting a mortgage on it? Of course you may. And so we want you to always balance the notion of being anxious about putting debt onto a property as part of an estate planning strategy versus the significant estate tax savings you can have. We're not necessarily recommending that you over-leverage the property, but just take some opportunity to take advantage of it. Next on the list is number five, which is NINGs and DINGs. These are trusts that can avoid state income tax. As you know, under the new Trump tax law, income tax that you pay on the state level is no longer a deductible item on your federal return. The states that have been hurt the most are the East Coast states, the West Coast states, and several states in the center of the country that have large demands on their social services system because they have big cities. In the end here, the income tax deductibility has been impactful on these states, and it is caused many people to emigrate out of the high state income tax areas. There is a way around that, however, and that is at least for your assets that are not generated within the state, what we call state-sourced assets, you can take assets and put them into a trust, which would avoid the state income tax. That trust has to be located in a state that currently does not tax assets, and the two that have been we've led with are Delaware and Nevada. How does it work? Well, you would make a trust, and we've been doing this on a regular basis, and move assets into the trust. You can be a beneficiary of the assets so that even though you've given them away, you can still enjoy access to the assets. But the trust and the home of the trustee is the home of the trust, and so we can avoid the state income tax. And yet you can still have access to it. The key piece here is that you haven't given the gift away in total. What you've done is just given it away sufficiently and completely enough to avoid the state income tax. One state in the nation does not allow this strategy in its more modest fashion, and that is New York. New York says you must give the asset away completely, what we call a completed gift. And then in that respect, you've now avoided estate tax because now the gift is out of your estate, but you're not able to have access to it the way you would if it was what we call an incomplete gift. So New York has that restriction, but many people are saying, I'm willing to give away a slug or a chunk of our assets to avoid the state income tax and know that I don't have access to it, but my spouse has access to it, for example. So we are very much in favor of these strategies. A more prominent way that this has worked is when we've had the sale of companies. So even prior to the new tax law, which doesn't allow you to deduct your state income tax, we have had many clients move business into a trust in Delaware and Nevada to avoid the tax altogether. Even though they were able to deduct it on the federal level, they just said, look, I'm going to wind up paying $500,000, $1 million, $2 or $3 million to New Jersey or to Connecticut or to New York or to California or Illinois. What I favor is moving the asset into a trust and avoiding the tax altogether. Remember, in New York, the gift has to be complete where you can no longer have access to it, but every other state in the nation allows us to move forward. So please consider the idea of giving this gift into the trust to avoid the annual income tax, and also that one big opportunity when there's a sale of a private equity piece, or there's a sale of a business where the asset is intangible. You cannot do this with real estate because, of course, it's anchored to the state in which you reside, and the income is sourced from the state from which you reside. Number six, upstream gifting of appreciated assets. We have talked about this for years, ever since we saw the exemption bump up. So generation one is grandma and grandpa. Generation two is the children. Generation three is the grandchildren. Generation two has done wonderfully in life and has invested in certain assets. Those assets now have continued to grow. And the basis, what they originally paid for, together with the depreciation of the tax depreciation, when you file your return each year, as you know, you can take a tax credit or a deduction against the perceived amount of work that's going to be needed to be done over a 30-year period, so they allow you to, quote-unquote, depreciate. So when you depreciate, you lower the basis, together with the fact of what you originally paid for it. So now when you want to sell the property, you have a big gain. So what about giving that gift to our parents? And then our parents, then when they pass away, basis gets reset. Well, it's fine if your parents are under the federal exemption, right? So if we don't want them to have to pay estate tax when they pass away. And can we give it to our parents and then have our parents give it back to us? Well, there's some arguments that that is a step transaction or a circular transaction where you've given it and then they've given it back. So the more conservative approach would be to give it to them and to a trust and then have them give it down to the grandchildren, which is one way, right? The second thing to consider, however, though, is if we're giving the gift, is it really our exemption that's being used? So we want to have a special trust where when your parents pass away, or when you, generation one, grandparents pass away, that these assets are included in your estate and subject to estate tax, but we get to step up in basis. So generation two, back to generation two, they would give the asset to generation one, and when generation one passes away, it goes into a trust. It's a certain trust that allows the assets to be included in their estate through what we call a general power of appointment, and then it would go down to the grandkids. Now, last piece on this is, well, I don't know if I've got a $5 million asset. Do I want to use all of my exemption in order to get the basis to get reset by making the gift to my parents? Well, what if I sold my real estate to a trust and my parents were the beneficiary? I held back the note on the trust that was due to me. The trust then would pay me with income, and then my parents would receive that asset. And when they passed away, it was clear that it was included in their estate, and maybe it passed to my wife in trust as long as we were married, or my husband as long as we were married. So the advancement of the upstream gifting is significant, providing real tax benefits. Once the property has passed to the children or the spouse, basis is reset and you can restart your whole depreciation schedule again at the new stepped up basis. So it's a gift that keeps on giving. Year after year, you find yourself in a situation where you're getting income tax benefits each year and in a joyful way because your parents were able to use their exemption. So we cannot focus enough on the idea of upstream gifting. It has to be an asset, however, that when you gift it to your parents, they would not then, when they pass away, be subject to estate tax. So we have to look at what you're selling to the trust. We have to look at what debt is owed to the trust, that the trust owes, in order to make this the perfect transfer. Number seven, which is the 199A qualified small business deduction. So the IRS gives us this opportunity to push out the payments on businesses. It was focused for years on farms because we hated to see small farms be sold, but then it evolved in its intention to just help all small business owners who would be subject to tax. So the creation of a non-grantor trust, again, would be set up and could be used to expand the qualified small business income that's deductible. So following the enactment of Tax Law 2018, taxpayers were entitled to a 20% deduction on their qualified business income from their partnerships and S-Corps. So if a single person's taxable income exceeds $157,000 or a married couple's taxable income exceeds $315,000, the deduction for the qualified business income is limited to 50% of the wages paid by the business, or 25% of the W-2 wages. This is complicated, but the piece that you need to know is that this is a strategy where we can transfer and save on income tax because the creator is not considered to be the income tax owner and transferring entity into the business. Since each trust is separate taxpayer, all qualified business income in connection with the trust share would benefit from the $157,500 threshold. So the idea is to divide up the asset, the business, into multiple ownerships, and then income would be allocated among several of them, and you would still be able to enjoy the benefits. The same would go tax benefits. The same would go for number eight, which is the qualified small business stock. So the creation of non-grantor trust can be used to increase the exclusion on capital gains with for qualified small business stock. Equally, the qualified small business stock is shares of a C corporation holding less than $50 million of assets, which have been held for more than 5 years. And so the tax code currently provides the exclusion on capital gains up to $10 million, or 10 times the cost basis, whichever is greater. Similarly, here we can take advantage of on the sale, when the capital gains exceeds the threshold, the shares from the non-grantor trust would provide a separate capital gains exclusion for each trust. Again, to avoid the tax threshold because we've divided it into multiple trusts. Number nine, property tax deductions. Many of you have a property tax if you're in New Jersey, Connecticut, New York, Florida, California, for certain, Illinois. You have significant property taxes, but you can only deduct up to $10,000. So this strategy is very similar to the strategy we just talked about for qualified small business stock. But say you own a beach house that has a $50,000 property tax, or that's where you live, you would divide the house up into multiple deeds, and each one would be held by a trust and would be for the benefit of each of your children. So your children would be an owner, first create an LLC, and the LLC would own all of the property 100%, and then you would gift fractions of the LLC to each of your children's trusts. They would then own that property, the LLC, of an amount that would be, if it's $50,000 and there were four children plus yourself, you would then have a total of each one owning 20% of the property, and each would be at the $10,000 threshold. Each would be able to deduct the tax, that the property tax. Of course, there have to be other assets inside the trust in order to have income to offset the deduction you have for the property tax. We have not employed this strategy, but we are on the precipice of doing it for people who have multiple trusts, for people who have properties that have significant tax and they're losing the tax deduction. Please come talk to us more because it's an exciting opportunity and we don't necessarily see any change to this, right? The idea is this is a punitive strategy against the wealthy, and if this is taking place during the Republican administration, the idea that a Bernie Sanders or whoever would be running and potentially win office would clearly not reverse that. So the idea of taking advantage of creating a trust for your primary residence or a secondary residence and avoiding the loss of tax deduction is a neat strategy. Number 10, it has been a long run today. So number 10 is tax opportunities with cost segregation. So if you own a piece of real estate that, say, in this instance is a $10 million property and you have been depreciating that property under a typical depreciation schedule, you have to work with the entire building. So cost segregation is a strategy where engineers and accountants have gotten together and they have figured and established that air conditioning units are on a different schedule than the rest of the building. Tearing down and renovating a new commercial space is a new opportunity to reset the basis. And so they divide the property or segregate the property into multiple units that where basis can be reset for very short periods of time. And under the new tax law, you can get a bonus if the schedule, the remainder, is less than 5 years old. So and get the immediate deduction in year one. So this requires that we bring experts in to analyze your property and to do the segregation. I have done this. I've done this many years ago. And it's a gift, again, that keeps giving because instead of a 30-year schedule, we have schedules for smaller chunks of the building based on what's in it, for example, air conditioning units and so forth, that we can accelerate, and the tax benefits have been significant. Not just the present value of getting the tax benefit now, but just overall every time you are abandoning a space when a tenant leaves and you are bringing that space down to the studs and then rebuilding it, you now have a new tax life that you can depreciate from that piece. So it is a wonderful opportunity to keep in mind. And then, of course, last is to take advantage of the Opportunity Zone funds. So this is not completely finalized, and there may be, but it may be a viable investment vehicle to defer capital gains. So in order to qualify for the deferral of the income tax, the capital gains must be invested in the fund within 180 days of a sale. Remaining invested in the fund for 5 to 7 years can eliminate 15% of the original gain. In order to be eligible for the 5 to 7 year basis readjustments, investments in the fund must be made by the end of 2021 or the end of 2019, respectively, whether you're going 5 or 7 years. That's the 2 year gap. Remaining invested for 10 years eliminates the capital gains on all the appreciation after the investment of the fund. The original capital gains that was deferred must ultimately be realized by December 31st, 2026. And the tax will then be due at that time. So it's always about defer on your taxes to have the present value of the income tax benefit today and the opportunity for continued enjoyment of tax benefits going forward.